Good morning. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this morning is, to my right, Justice Ann Gardner. To my left, Justice Bob McCoy. I'm Leanne Dofino. We have only one case set for oral submission this morning. It's my understanding that everybody's ready to go, so we'll call the first case.
May it please the court, Mr. Gray will argue for appellant. Mr. Edward Fowler will argue for appellee.
May it please the court. I'm Jay Gray. I'm arguing for appellant Gray Law. This case involves some very fundamental principles of law. One of those is whether an order and judgment rendered without the party being present is moot. Also, whether a fundamental principle involving the court's lack of subject matter jurisdiction when a court exceeds its authority to act makes an order void and also makes the order a nullity. Gray Law was not a party to the divorce proceedings below. Gray Law was the owner of property. Gray Law was not present when an order was entered to order appointing a receiver to take the property of Gray Law and sell it. That order is void. That order lacked both personal jurisdiction. That order lacked subject matter jurisdiction.
What do you have to say about the footnote on their page 12 where it talks about the act of a partner not apparently for carrying on the partnership business binds the partnership, talking about Howie, if authorized by the other partner. A ratification relates back to the initial unauthorized action. With the ratification of the sale by Howie, J. Gray's Rule 11 agreement became the act of Gray Law as of March 30, 2005, well before the court approved the contract for sale.
Your Honor, as the court knows, and then I believe Justice McCoy, you were on when the panel cited the first mandamus decision. That was not considered.
I think I dissented.
No, sir. There was one mandamus where it was dissented, where you requested that the real party in interest reply to stop the sale. When I tried to stop the sale, the second mandamus opinion, I believe you authored, if I'm not mistaken, which is
one of the proceeds. Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. What about that,
Your Honor? You cannot. First off, couple things. There was never any consent by Jay Gray on behalf of the partnership.
But I know, but it and then there was the other partner, Howie.
And there was a statement by Howie about he did not have any objection to the money, to the sale of the property. But that was after the fact, after the order was entered appointing a receiver. Once a void order is void, or once an order is void. It's a nullity. You can't ratify, you can't go backwards, you can't retroactively make something valid that is a nullity. And so any actions that took place...
Wait, slow down.
Yes, sir.
Say that again. But the sale hadn't taken place. The receiver may have been appointed, but the sale hadn't taken place, right?
At the time of that hearing, the sale had not taken place. That was a confirmation of the contract.
Okay.
But the property had been taken from Gray Law on April 13th and put in custodius legis by the court. The property was taken by an order signed April 13th, well before this hearing ever took place.
I understand.
A contract for sale had already been entered into at the time of this hearing, and this was confirmation of the contract, which then went.
So your point is what?
My point is,
the sale hadn't occurred.
Yes, sir. The sale had not occurred at that point. The contract of sale had been entered, but the deed had not been transferred. Was my only point with regard to that. But the fact that the order was entered on April 13th without Gray Law present, without subject matter jurisdiction, you can't make it retroactive. Howie's comment coming in to sell the property cannot make it retroactive, make that order valid at that point. Also, Your Honor, at that point, the other partner was not in agreement, and he informed the court of that. It told me, Jay Gray, the partner there, told the court that Gray Law was not before the court and could not agree on behalf of Gray Law, and that the only agreement reached was Jay Gray on his individual behalf. That initially, in which that had been withdrawn because of the misunderstanding on the property.
Okay.
And the partnership was the owner.
Where are the proceeds?
Your Honor, they were ordered to be dispersed. And as this court said in its second, or in the mandamus in ordering the release, Gray Law needed the funds to operate. Gray Law used those monies for storage.
So they are not in the registry of the court?
No, sir, they are not in the registry
of
the court.
Well, then how do you respond to their lead dog argument?
Your Honor, first off, this court has already decided that issue. In the mandamus opinion that you authored, the second mandamus, where it released, ordered the release of the funds, the court decided that economic necessity developed. There is a doctrine called acceptance of benefits, which is their lead argument, which was not raised in a motion, in the motion for summary judgment below, first off. It's an estoppel principle, which this court, it's a little loose because it's an equitable principle. This court has the opportunity, I guess, to possibly consider that, but it can also consider all the factors and evidence outside the record, even, in determining whether that applies.
Okay,
so if the court is going to apply that, then the court needs to also consider that the economic duress is an exception to the acceptance of benefits doctrine. If the order puts the person or the entity or person in a situation of economic duress where they where they're forced to accept that portion of the judgment or that portion of the order, then that's an exception. They're not bound by that. They can still appeal that order. They can still order it. The other option is, Your Honor, quite frankly, it's a void order.
But, I mean, what
principles do not apply.
You've got the money. You've used the money. Now what? You want the property back, but you don't want to give the money? I mean, what are you asking?
No one's ever said that, Your Honor. No one's ever said that the money would not be put back.
Okay, what are you asking for?
The title to the property. The title.
And give the money back?
Yes, Your Honor, if that's what it came down to. That would not be a problem. I don't think that really is applicable in this situation because T&H Partners is not the one. There was one other party in the middle. But, yes, I will stand. That money would be put back. I have no problem with that. I'll speak on behalf of Gray Law saying that would not be a problem if the title was received back. Your Honor, one of the things that you look at, one of the things to consider is the benefit of this order, which forced the title to be sold. Accepting the benefit of $1 million sale and getting $63,000 is not much of a benefit. And being put out on the, being having an office, the firm having an office and being put out of business essentially, being forced out within a month. That's not much of a benefit, Your Honor. I don't think there is really an acceptance of benefits under this situation. And quite honestly, this is not a situation where I hid behind, or when Gray Law hid behind the log and then came forward and said, oh, now that I've gotten the money, I want to set this order aside. This is a situation where I mandamus the Court of Appeals to stop the sale of the property beforehand. As Justice McCoy, as you recall, you dissented in that opinion. You didn't want a response. And at that time, I believe there might have been some confusion over the partnership entity law with regard to that, and this is why it was not. I'm only assuming that based upon the oral argument of the second mandamus. And this is not a situation of equity where Gray Law hid behind the law, came up and took the money, and then came and said, well, King's X can't happen. This is a situation where I did everything possible, tried to stop it. I am, and Gray Law is willing to give the money back. And it's, quite frankly, Your Honor, it's a response to an order that was void, that was done without Gray Law even being present, and Gray Law objecting.
Oh, no.
Matters of equity do not apply. They don't attach to a void order. A void order is a nullity. The first thing you have to look before you get into all these things that happened afterwards is look to see whether that order was even valid to transfer title. If that order did not transfer title, equity doesn't apply in this situation, even though, in response to your questions, I am willing to accept portions of the equity and refund the money and put the money back in. Some of the money is still there, Your Honor.
Well,
some of it was.
These people paid $1 million for the property.
Yes, sir.
You got 63.
Yes, sir.
How do they get the other $937,000 back? You're willing to give them 63.
Well,
what's that about?
The money, Your Honor, there was a profit made by the individual who purchased the property from the receiver, a former partner of his, that turned around and sold it within a month or 2 weeks, I believe, for a couple of extra $100,000 on this situation. That's what title insurance is for, unfortunately. That's all I can say. There are remedies that they have against the person who sold it to them. There are remedies that they also have against title insurance, and that's why title insurance policies are issued. And there are legal remedies they can also seek. Unfortunately, put us in this situation where we are in a position where to a certain extent, we're both victims, as I can see it. But since 1864, the Texas Supreme Court and the Texas laws in this case have said that if an order is void it does not pass title. And it's considered these two victim situations before. The courts have looked at this issue before. This is not the first time this has ever been considered, whether good title passed and whether a bona fide purchaser in this situation would be exempt or would be able to still own title or would take good title. The courts, since 1864, dealing with this very issue, have said that if an order transferring the title was moot, it passes no good title. And it looked at the equities of a bona fide purchaser and said it does not apply. Does not apply. It can only, the bona fide purchaser can only accept the title it receives from the receiver and the, through his chain of title.
Well, it seems to me that you needed to directly attack in the divorce proceeding what happened.
Sir,
when this was here, this was before us, you, reading our own opinion, and I think I was the author of this one, Jay responded in writing that he and appellant Gray Law have no objection to this appeal being dismissed as moot. So it seems to me that's when there was the opportunity to directly attack what happened here, assuming an error occurred. But according to this memorandum opinion, you let it go if we dismissed it.
Your Honor, what happened in that situation was the divorce was being appealed between myself
right.
and my ex-wife, Catherine Gray.
And Gray Law was involved.
And Gray Law was involved at that yep. point, but T&H Partners wasn't. The receiver right. had already been dissolved.
Right.
I had submitted a brief. They had not. There was no response, and there was no brief or opposition to my brief. I believe that it probably was moot at that point. I did not agree that it was moot. I just didn't object to the court dismissing it as moot because this case was already pending in 48th District Court, in which I felt was a more appropriate forum because the real party in interest that is on the property now would have the opportunity to argue and to defend their position. Whereas I was going to be sitting there, I was going to be a situation in a divorce where there was no briefing from the other party. T&H Partners wasn't even a party to it, but yet their rights were being affected. And I don't believe, I think once the court, once there was a resolution of the divorce and those paper, and those matters were dismissed or agreed to between Catherine and Jay Gray, that court, those things were moot at that point. And I think any issue, and once the receiver is dissolved, it becomes moot with regard to that appeal. But that is something what kind of begs the question that we're here about is whether this order is void or not. Because if it is void, then it's subject to a collateral attack. If a court acts without jurisdiction or of personal jurisdiction or subject matter jurisdiction, it's subject to collateral attack, which is what we're doing here, Your Honor. And which
your
I felt.
Your position is that it's voidable. And your position, of course, is that it's void.
Yes, sir. That's
Why
what.
Don't you address their position that it's voidable as opposed to void?
Your Honor, this is that's the main question in this case. And the question is it void or voidable? And any judgment which lacks jurisdiction, personal or subject matter, is void. There's no question. That goes back, and that is the most fundamental principle, and it goes back through our case law and through Texas history, back before when the books first started being published, quite frankly. It goes back to the earliest I found was Texas, the Texas Reports of 27 when it was first addressed, and I'm sure it probably goes back before then. But it is the most fundamental principle of this system that we have is that a party has the right to be present when its interests are being affected and that the court has to have authority to act on the matters. This court has already determined that the court below exceeded its authority. It said so in the opinion. It said so in the second mandamus opinion that this court that the court below had exceeded its authority and had no authority to act. Now, also, with regard to personal jurisdiction, there was no personal jurisdiction. Gray Law was not even available to be present at the time when this was done. That makes this order void. Nothing that happens afterwards, Gray Law's appearance after the order is entered, nothing. Any actions that occur afterwards, once that order is void, it is always void and a nullity. It cannot be ratified. It cannot be confirmed. Even by agreement with the parties, it cannot be adopted. It cannot be stopped. No, estoppel principles do not apply. A void order is a nullity. And the reason for that is that courts cannot act outside their authority without a person present when their rights are being affected. That is one of the most fundamental principles of Texas law, and is the basis of this case, Your Honor. If we start cutting into excuses or ways around jurisdictional issues, these fundamental principles, it's a long and snaky road that we're going to have to walk, because ever so often we're going to run across one of the snakes that bites us. By doing that, by taking our fundamental principles out of this system and looking for ways around it. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Ed Fowler, and I'm here on behalf of T&H Partners. It's not correct to say that the divorce court put Gray Law and Jay Gray in this position. The facts in this case are complex, I'll grant that much, and I've set them out in detail in my brief. But those really at the core of this dispute and necessary to decide this case are relatively straightforward and undisputed. Both of the partners, there are only two partners, Jay Gray and John Howie, agreed that this property could be sold by this receiver appointed in this case for that amount of money of the contract. The court has noted, Justice McCoy, the case law, including a case from this very court, saying that if a partner, for a personal reason, seeks to act with partnership property and it is concurred with by the other partners, in this case one partner, then it becomes the act of the partnership, and there is solid case law from the Dallas court, and it makes sense so that third parties are protected, that this act is effective for that partnership as of the time that the personal act was taken. That personal act was taken before the court ordered the property placed in his custodial legis. The personal act was Jay Gray entering into the Rule 11 agreement, authorizing the sale of the property by the court. And that's an important fact here.
How do you address his response, which is obviously I wasn't acting on behalf of the partnership because I thought I individually owned it?
I respond in several different ways. Number one, I'm not sure that Mr. Gray understood the effect of his saying, I personally have no objection to this sale and to the price. I, Jay Gray, do not. Coupled with John Howie saying, I, John Howie, have no objection to the sale of this property and the price and this receiver selling it. That then became the act of the partnership. So Mr. Gray's effort was misplaced to say, Judge, the partnership is not here. The partnership was bound by that decision already, and it was bound as of March before the court took possession of the property and ordered it sold. What's the problem here? And I agree and grant that these facts are bizarre, and that certainly the matter should be limited to the facts of the case, as is good conduct for the court, obviously, in any event, as the court well recognizes. But Jay Gray put this property up for sale by a Rule 11 agreement, which, incidentally, he never sought to withdraw or modify, never, at a time when he knew but did not tell the court and did not tell the receiver that the property was titled in Gray Law's name. Now, he may have thought that he was the beneficial owner, but that has to do with a tardy dissolution of a partnership that had not acted for years. The partnership had been dissolved long ago, or at least did not effectively continue. And so he had the opportunity to clarify before he entered into the Rule 11 agreement whether or not he did, in fact, beneficially own the property. And not only that, at the time of the hearing when the court was asked to approve the receiver's contract before the property had been deeded, he had the opportunity to say, Judge, I'm rethinking this. I want to withdraw my consent to the sale of this. I want to withdraw my Rule 11 agreement. I don't want the property sold because there may be some confusion here. He didn't say that. Instead, he said, Judge, I don't have any problem with selling this property, and I don't have any problem with the price being offered. What's at the heart of this? What is at the heart of this is that even though Jay Gray believed at the time that this was a fair price for the property and agreed that it was a fair price, as did Mr. Howie, is that he subsequently decided that it was not a fair price for the property. And what he is wanting is more money. He didn't want to keep this property. He didn't want to practice law in that office.
I think we're going outside the record.
We are going outside the record, which he did in arguing about distress and that type of thing. That's not in the record. There was no evidence taken at that hearing. So if we're going to, I'll stay within the record or go back to the record. The facts are, as Justice McCoy questioned, that the proceeds of this court-ordered sale were sought, were accepted, were retained, and benefited and benefit today this partnership and Jay Gray. There was the mortgage of Gray Law for over $670,000 that was paid out of the proceeds of this sale. Gray Law had never paid property taxes on this building since they purchased it. Delinquent property taxes of over $66,000 were paid. A personal judgment against Jay Gray was paid out of the proceeds of that sale, and Jay Gray and or Gray Law, they're essentially one and the same, received the residual $60,000-something, which they said, give to me, give to me. They weren't saying, we don't think this sale is good, we're not entitled to the sale proceeds. The bottom line is, it just isn't and can't be the law that the sale was bad, but I'm entitled to retain all of the fruits of the sale. You can't have it both ways. And there, you can't say part of it's right and part of it's wrong, because it all flowed from the same thing. There wouldn't have been proceeds but for the sale. There is case law out there, and I've cited it in my brief, that says that even a void order, and this one certainly was not void, is cannot be attacked for lack of personal jurisdiction where the party attacking it received the benefits and accepted the benefits of the order that he now attacks. And that is precisely the case here. These cases are cited on page 13 of my brief. The early lead case is Marshall versus Lockhead out of the Waco Court of Appeals. It says that clear as a bell, that even if you didn't have personal jurisdiction and it would otherwise be void, you can't say that, because you accepted and retained the benefits of the order that you're now attacking. You can't do that. There are any number of theories of law, recognized theories of law out there dealing with a situation that require and call for an affirmance of what the trial court did in this case. This court has said that the matter is moot. I differ with Mr. Gray about what his letter said. It said, we agree that it's moot, just as I think Justice McCoy recalls and just as is recited in this court's memorandum opinion.
Well, we said Jay responded in writing that he and appellant Gray Law have no objection to the appeal being dismissed as moot.
There is a letter in the record that says just that. And so there's no question but what that was said. The facts are that they said, the partners both said, sell this property. Let this receiver sell it. Let him sell it for the amount of his contract. We're both good with that. Under those circumstances where they got the benefits of the money, the issue becomes moot. They said do it. It was done. They got the money. Now, it's a moot issue. There are other grounds. I've just mentioned one where it's barred, and that is where you get the proceeds of an order, this case a sale. You can't say the order was not good except with respect to the proceeds. I get to keep the proceeds, but the order of selling it, no, that's not good. You can't have it both ways, because the only way you get the proceeds is if the sale stands. The subject matter jurisdiction, the cases, the old cases back in the 1870s, I was not alive then. My partner, Mr. Fortney, was around.
Excuse me, we were in high school together.
Okay. Well, let me take a step back. The cases that he is relying upon are cases in the probate court having to do with homestead. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the subject matter jurisdiction that a court sitting as a domestic relations court has with respect to property issues. This court in the Lopez case, was it the Lopez case? No, it was the Gibson case that I've cited in the brief on page 15, said, well, let me back up and say this before I mention that case. The cases, the Supreme Court and others are replete with the notion that the divorce court has the power, the duty, the responsibility, the subject matter jurisdiction to decide all issues with respect to marital property. And that includes the power, the duty, and the right to make decisions even if they're wrong. And if they're wrong, as the court has pointed out, that needs to be rectified in the proceeding in which the, quote, wrong decision was made. It is at worst voidable, and it is not void, and therefore not subject to a collateral attack. This court, in the Gibson case that I mentioned, had before it facts not unlike these. A specific partnership asset from a partnership in which one of the divorcing parties was a partner, just what we have here, was awarded. And this court said, no, shouldn't have done that because it's a partnership asset, and that's not part of the marital estate, so we're going to undo that. But the court said that is voidable only. It's not void. It was a decision the court needed to make. They just made the wrong one. So it's voidable only, not void, and it's not subject to a collateral attack.
Well, if I understand what you're saying on your other argument, you don't care if it's void or voidable because the benefits of the bargain were accepted.
That is certainly true, and there is case law to support that with respect to the personal jurisdiction issue for sure.
Then your backup argument is it's voidable, not void, and you can't attack it collaterally.
Absolutely.
It needed to be attacked directly through the divorce. Is
right.
That what you're saying? I'm not saying I'm agreeing with it, but that's what you're saying in essence.
I am saying those things.
All right.
Now, I'm saying more than that, but I am certainly saying that.
All right.
And so the bottom line here is that you cannot have it both ways. There's been no tender. There was never a tender in all the years that this lawsuit has been pending of any money. And, of course, we've got the mortgage company. I doubt they're going to come back up with that $600-something thousand. I don't think the county is going to come up with the $60-something thousand in delinquent taxes that were paid. There's been no allegation, no effort, no showing, nothing from Gray Law or Jay Gray that we will put everybody back at square one. Basically, what the position has been is we want to keep the money. That was helpful to us. We needed that. But now we want the property free and clear to go back again to sell it. Won't work.
I have a question. Mr. Gray referred to an intermediate sale. Was there an intermediate purchaser that then turned around and sold it to your client?
Yes. The court-ordered sale, the receiver's sale, was deeded to a partnership by the name of 121 Properties. And 121 Properties sold the property to T&H Partners, my client.
Does BFP come into this anywhere?
Yeah, it could, Your Honor. In fact, there is a provision in the Partnership Act, which I did not plead, I should have, that talks about third parties. But I don't think we need to reach that. I don't think we need to reach that at all for the reasons set forth in the brief. We just don't get there because this was not a void sale. It was at most voidable, and you can't have it both ways.
Okay. It just kind of seems like to me that they're a BFP, but Okay.
Yes. I think that there is a good chance that they could qualify as a BFP, but under the law and facts of this case, I don't think it's necessary that they do so.
Okay.
Thank the court.
Mr. Gray, why don't you start off by, we talked about it briefly, and you kind of threw out economic duress or something, but.
Yes, sir.
One who elects to accept and retain the fruits of an order is barred from asserting its invalidity, that is, that it is void.
Except for the two exceptions. One is economic duress.
And what is the economic duress?
Being the order itself puts you in a position or puts the person in a position where they have to have to accept the benefits of it to be able to proceed.
But
in other
how
words,
are you proceeding if you were totally behind in your property tax?
I wasn't, Your Honor. Oh, property, okay.
Fault? You had $635,000. I mean,
the mortgage was being paid. The fact that the taxes had never been paid is false.
Okay.
The fact that the mortgages behind were false.
Why was there suddenly duress? What's the economic duress? And what in the record shows that? And where have you pled economic duress?
Your Honor, here's the problem with that. Is that wasn't raised in the summary judgment down below. He brought it up only as an election of remedy in the summary judgment below, so there wasn't a response to this doctrine, this acceptance of the benefit doctrine, which is an estoppel argument. Now the court does have the opportunity to consider evidence outside or stuff outside the record with regard to this equitable estoppel argument. But according to the Waco court, which also is the one that said it applies to jurisdiction, that's the only reason I bring those things up. The motion for summary judgment is supposed to stand on its own, and within the motion, it has to be pled. Those bases have to be argued. That wasn't argued.
We're going down rabbit trails.
No, Your Honor.
Question to you is, do you address their basically, you got the benefit of the bargain argument. Okay, you've told me economic duress, and now we're trying to go outside of the record for evidence of that, and I didn't read that in your brief. Is that just one of your ways to address that, or is there another way?
Well, Your Honor, that's the main issue, other than the fact it wasn't raised before so that those things could be in the record, is my point. It wasn't raised in the summary judgment. That's why those things are not in the record, and that's why we're having to go outside the record. The equitable estoppel argument was not raised in the summary judgment. It was only raised as an election of remedy, and that the case was dismissed as moot. That the actual equitable estoppel argument was not raised down there. That's why there's no evidence in the record of it. And that's why we're talking about it.
Why wasn't it raised down there?
Why wasn't it? I don't know, Your Honor. They called it an election of remedies doctrine down there instead of an estoppel argument. An election of remedies, which was addressed, there was no election of remedies. But as far as the equity part of that argument, it was not in the summary judgment, not addressed. I don't know why they did
that. They never raised what I've been calling benefit of the bargain.
What's actually called the acceptance of the benefit doctrine.
Right.
And that was not raised in the principles of an estoppel. The only thing that was put in the summary judgment was the defense of election of remedies. There was the argument of election of remedies, which is totally a different defense, which is not equity. It's an argument, it's separate and apart. You don't get into the economic duress that you would have as an exclusion to the acceptance of benefits doctrine. That's why it does not come up. Now the Waco Court of Appeals that decided that the only court to apply this to a jurisdictional issue, this estoppel argument, has also said that they can consider things outside the record for equitable estoppel, which I agree, Your Honor,
Is that in your brief? Is that in your brief?
No,
Waco
sir.
Court?
No, sir, because it hadn't still been raised until they responded to my brief, to the appellate brief. And I can submit a letter brief as soon as this is done, Your Honor, with regard to the equitable estoppel arguments that are being raised for the first time in their response to our brief.
Okay, excuse me. I have a couple of questions.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Did you enter into a Rule 11 agreement that included this property?
Jay Gray did. Gray Law did not.
Well, I'm asking if the guy standing behind the podium here entered into a Rule 11 agreement.
Yes, Your Honor. Jay Gray did. It was not individually because they thought he owned
regarding,
the property.
Regarding that piece of real estate, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And did your partner, Mr. Howie, enter into an agreement or agreed, not enter into an agreement, but agreed to sell the real estate?
His attorney at the hearing stated that I believe he had no objection to the money, to it, as long as the money was placed in the registry of the court or something to that regard. I don't remember the exact
one. Okay, so how's the trial judge going to know there's a problem?
Because it was raised, I told him at the hearing, I was the one who, Gray Law was the one who informed the receiver of the title problem before the hearing. We were at that hearing to tell the judge there was a problem to reschedule the hearing so that everything else could be addressed. And the judge interrupted me during my discussions saying that, Judge, I, J. Gray, do not have standing to make objections to this, to the purchase price, to say he was going to go ahead and go forward with the sale anyway, regardless. And that's how that happened, Your Honor. Gray Law was objecting to it, had withdrawn any consent that had been provided by J. Gray.
But both of the individual partners agreed to the sale.
Not at that time, Your Honor, no. Under when there were different circumstances, J. Gray had, but now there's different issues that came up because Gray Law had different obligations and duties and still owes debts that it needs to pay at this point, once it was put out of business and moved off. And my red light's gone off. I apologize.
Thank you very much.
Sorry.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate your argument. Your case is submitted. And we appreciate your briefing. It was very helpful. Since you're the only case we have this morning, this court will be adjourned.